Coming up on today's Family.ie radio magazine, when it comes to how we communicate with our loved ones, what we don't say can actually speak volumes, whether we mean it or not.
What we're doing and how we're portraying ourselves, it nearly says more than the words that come out of our mouth, from the tilt of your head or narrowing of your eyes or slamming a door. We communicate volumes by the words we don't use, and really we have to look very closely at our non-verbal behaviour.
We'll hear more about that in a moment, and stay with us for more about how to drug-proof your kids. You may be thinking, sure, it all sounds good in theory, but how would that work on a daily basis in my own home?
The parenting style of the parent in the relationship will have a significant impact on the risk factors or otherwise, or protective factors, that will be in play for the child.
And in our third segment today, when love is so young, you probably have a hard time believing that you'll ever be at odds with your future spouse. But conflict in marriage is inevitable.
And conflict can be scary for some people because they may have come from a home where things weren't said and there wasn't conflict, but it was the unsaid, which is equally as damaging.
That's all ahead on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. I'm Ronan Johnston. So far in the series, TNT for Dynamite Relationships. Stephen Cardy, Heather Walsh and Jer Shanahan have been exploring what's been called the two sides of love. The team defined both the tough side and the tender side. They explored what Drs. John Trent and Gary Smalley say are the four main personality types, and how people who are like lions and beavers gravitate toward the tough side of love, while people who have personalities like otters and golden retrievers naturally lean towards the tender side of love. Each personality has its own strengths. They also have potential weaknesses, and the most effective relationships are those that have a balance of the two sides of love. Here's Stephen, Heather and Jer.
Being too far to one extreme or another is unhelpful, particularly when you're dealing with people that are different from you. And in our families, we're bound to have, if we're married, we may well be married to somebody who's quite different from us. And if we have children, it's very likely that we have children who have a different orientation to us. So that expecting people to be like me doesn't work. And if we understand that we need to adjust and soften our approach if we're hard-sided, in order to meet the needs of those other people, then we'll have much better quality relationships with those people.
Are we saying then that those of us who are more inclined towards the hard side are deficient or weak and have, let's say, emotional freeze points in our personalities or characters?
It's probably more likely, Jer, that people who have emotional freeze points are people who, to use this phrase, are frozen in time, if you like, in their emotions, and therefore not able to express emotions, and therefore they're showing or displaying some of the characteristics that we've described in beavers and lions, who tend to be emotionally more distant. They may well be frozen in time because of something in their life history or in their journey, as well as perhaps something that's in their personality. So something that can create emotional freeze point might be an abusive parent, a major event, a shock that causes us to freeze, you know, and get, in a sense, get frozen in time. And the result of that is that we want to put emotional distance between ourselves and others. And the consequence of that is that we don't get close to the people that are close to us, because we won't allow them in because of the shock or the distress or the harm that's been done by the sort of scenarios I've already described. And if that's the case, that people are stuck in a time warp or with a freeze point, you know, something that has got them locked up inside themselves, they may need to look at that and say, well, was my distance and my lack of relationship with people close to me a reflection of the fact that my parents weren't close to me, or that I've been through a divorce before, or that I was bullied at school, or whatever it may be, that caused this to happen, which has caused me to withdraw. So I may be displaying some of the characteristics we described as either lions or beavers, because we're trying to protect ourselves from hurt. And if that is the case, if it's very severe, we may need professional help and counselling and so on. But it may be just a question that we might need to say to ourselves, look, I did suffer a shock, I've had this sort of thing has happened, and I need to start thinking about that.
We ought to be aware then that if we have an inclination towards the hard side of love, we may have to do a small little bit of digging, we will say, to find out if there's anything in our background that might be blocking.
Yeah. I mean, take an example. Something happened and I said I would never treat my wife like that, the way my dad treated my mother.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't the case for me, but that might be the sort of comment that would describe a freeze point that happens. That you're saying to yourself, I hardened myself because I was not going to allow me as a husband to be like that with my wife. But at the same time, I never got close to my wife, and I'm frozen somehow stuck with, I'm not going to let this happen. So you could ask yourself some questions like these, Ger. Did you see a balance on the soft side and hard side of love in your home? And if not, towards what extreme has it shifted? Because if it was all hard side oriented, you probably learnt to behave like that, and therefore you're now behaving like that because you picked it up at home. Or you could ask yourself, are you aware of a specific situation or season in your parents' past that may have blocked them from giving you both sides of love? So you've not experienced soft love, and therefore you're only accustomed to dishing out or delivering hard love, as it's described, you know, of discipline and protection and order and routine and so on, but you're not affectionate and compassionate and so on because you never receive that. Or do you see yourself giving the same sides of love to your children that you receive from your parents? And does that concern you? Or is it something that you're pleased about? You know, so you might ask yourself, am I stuck in the lion and beaver territory of being quite hard and maybe even distant? And is there something maybe I want to change? So the first thing you might ask yourself if you want to become less hard is, have I been modelled with this hard side by others, and am I repeating that and so on, or do I want to change it?
So we're not actually tied into a particular type. If we do find ourselves inclined towards a particular type, it's not that this becomes an authoritative thing in our lives. We can actually move towards a degree of balance towards the soft side if we wish.
Definitely. I mean, one of the big advantages of a set of programs like this, Ger, is we can learn that people who are different from us have other strengths that are actually valuable, and we can understand what those strengths are and why they're valuable. And you know, when you think about them, you begin to say, well, actually I admire Johnny or Mary for being like that, and they're not like me. And instead of being critical of them or harsh towards them or whatever, you value them and you start thinking, and you can change your orientation and mindset. This isn't you're not condemned to be on the hard side of your life. You can move towards balance, and that's what the intent of today's conversation is, to help people look at, am I too hard-sided? And if so, how can I move towards a more balanced approach?
This is Family.ie Radio Magazine. For copies of this audio series and many others, free to listen to or download for later, we hope you'll head over to Family.ie. And if you'd like to weigh in on the discussion at some point, our text comment line is 086-251-6886. Or email us anytime, info@family.ie. That's 086-251-6886 or info@family.ie. So keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. As we continue today's Radio Magazine programme, we turn now to another article. How to drug-proof your kids. We're happy to have professional childcare worker and course facilitator Paul Mangan join us, and we'll have more expert opinion as well from Dr. John Tomberew. So Stephen, as we move forward, let's begin with a look back at what we've learned so far.
Parents taking this programme, Drug Proof Your Kids, will get a chance to look at how have they established that with their children, how have they given their children responsibility, and they'll get a chance to actually make a plan as to how could I do that now, how could I introduce responsibilities to my children.
The question that needs to be asked is, what signal are you sending to your child regarding how you deal with your problematic stress or whatever it is, yeah? And that signal that you're sending out is key, really. And I think that's, the parents who've gone on the programme have found that extremely challenging.
How much drinking is actually safe? How much can we allow our kids?
One of the problems that adolescents have is that their pattern of drinking, which involves short-term binge drinking, is actually exactly the pattern of drinking that can have some of the gravest consequences for brain states.
What we looked at was the whole issue of emotional integrity in the part of the parent and how that plays into the relationship they have with their child and the environment that their child is growing up with, that they can develop emotional integrity and strength for themselves, so that if they find themselves exposed to their risks of drug and alcohol abuse, that they have the wherewithal within themselves to withstand that. And we looked at tipping the balance, if you like, in favour of protective factors as opposed to risk factors in the life of our child by the way in which we manage ourselves. So we said that there were three keys for parents to unlock their happiness: was to master their own mind, refuel their battery, and manage their time well. And we gave them a go-home exercise to do to look at those three issues specifically.
Stephen, three ways of parenting. What's that about?
The parenting style of the parent in the relationship will have a significant impact on the risk factors or otherwise, or protective factors, that will be in play for the child. And the three styles of parenting are permissive parenting, authoritarian parenting, and executive or authoritative parenting. And they do have a significant impact in terms of the protective world of the child, because if they're being parented by a very permissive parent, they'd be allowed to do whatever they want, and, you know, being given what they desire at all stages. Basically, it's a free-for-all, there's no boundaries. With the authoritarian parent, it's my rule is law, and you do what you're told, and as soon as the child grows old enough, they'll rebel against that type of parenting and go and do what they want anyway. Or in the third case, there's the executive parenting or the authoritative parenting, where the parent does take responsibility and is responsible in their manner of parenting of their child. That makes a huge difference in the world of the child, produces by far the best outcomes, and there's a lot of social research to prove that.
Could you explain then how using the executive style helps our children to grow in independence?
Well, children who are parented this way tend to grow up with a sense of security, acceptance and belonging. And that, of course, is a very good foundation. Last time we talked about building a strong foundation for our children and really giving them a sense of security, acceptance and belonging is a very good foundation. They tend to have respect for rules and authority, and there tends to be lower levels of conflict with parents if parents have this executive style. Children tend to take responsibility more easily, and they tend to be more resilient as well. So we get greater self-determination, greater self-confidence, and a much higher mutual regard and respect for people. And I think if you put all those things, all those qualities together, you're going to have a person who can pretty much make a go of their life in whatever sphere they want to work or belong.
Could you give examples of the executive style at work?
For example, at the age of 8, they can, you know, they can get themselves dressed in the morning. You know, they can tidy their room. They can maybe do some other things. When they're in early adolescence, they might be used to tidying clothes and doing washing and so on, helping with wash up after the dinner. While if they get a bit older, they may be cutting the lawn and so on. You know, they're operating a machine. So what it encourages parents to do is to delegate to the child responsibility, so the child learns to be responsible. And the parent is accustomed to the idea of letting the child go, so that as they get older, they're in this journey that the parent understands is that they're equipping them for life. So as they equip them, they let them experience life for themselves in the safe environments of home.
That's right. Letting our children go is probably one of the biggest challenges for parents, because while they're small and they're young and they're tiny, we know where they are and what they're doing, and we can have them all nicely tucked up in bed at 6 or 7 o'clock at night. As they grow up, as parents, we have to be able to be courageous enough to let them go. And as Stephen was describing, that will vary according to their age. I suppose the idea of travel is quite a good one, because when they're young, mostly when they're travelling anywhere, they'll be accompanied. It'd be very unusual for them to be going off on their own at 8 years of age. And when they become maybe 11 to 13, you might let them go maybe around the corner to their friend's house or to the shop for you or whatever is locally deemed safe and careful. But by the time they're getting to be 16, you're expecting them to be able to be making their own way to school or to whatever they have to go to. So that's a good way of thinking about letting go. We have to let go in all kinds of other ways as well. And children have to take responsibility in life. And children that have been brought up with an executive pattern of parenting will have been able to do that. But all is not lost, as we always say. It's never too late. All is not lost. And parents taking this programme, Drug Proof Your Kids, will get a chance to look at how have they established that with their children? How have they given their children responsibility? And they'll get a chance to actually make a plan as to how could I do that now? How could I introduce responsibilities to my children?
I take it then that as a parent engages in this programme of literally structuring the life of the child, there will have to be contracts, defined activities, consequences and rewards.
All of those things, Ger, yeah, all of those things will be utilised in getting it together, as it were, and getting your plan together. And I think we have to remember, we talked about risk factors and protective factors before, and this is a great protective factor because it's devising a plan that allows our children to take control of their lives and to learn how to do that in a safe way. So if we get responsibility, appropriate responsibility in place for our children, that's another protective factor we're building into their lives. Remember, we want to tip the balance all the time away from the risks towards the protection.
You may be thinking, sure, it all sounds good in theory, but how would that work on a daily basis in my own home? We hope you'll head over to family.ie. If you can't find what you're looking for, contact us. We're honoured to help in any way we can. Again, that's family.ie. This is family.ie radio magazine. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next, some young couples may be listening and already they mightn't like the thought of conflict because in their minds at least, it means the end of their closeness. But that's not what it means at all. You'll find more information about marriage by design on today's edition of family.ie radio magazine. Welcome once again to our family.ie radio magazine. When love is so young, you probably have a hard time believing that you'll ever be at odds with your future spouse. But conflict in marriage is inevitable. However, the way in which conflict is handled can be quite different. For some couples, it sounds like this.
Will you be a dear and pass me the butter, darling?
Why, certainly, darling. Why do I have to do everything around this house?
What was that, dear?
Oh, nothing, dear. Nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, for others, the conflict in their marriage is much more subtle.
Listen to me, maggot! I'm your mama now. You will speak only when spoken to. And if I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Now be a man and pass me that butter, soldier!
But is either way really healthy for your relationship?
A good marriage is made in heaven. But so is thunder and lightning.
Today, Stephen Carty, Heather Walsh and Ger Shanahan welcome once again four pre-marriage counsellors, our own Stuart Kenny and his wife Breda, along with Alan and Diane Morris of RelationshipCentral.org. Now, Stephen, some young couples may be listening and already they're thinking, this isn't for us. They mightn't like the thought of conflict because in their minds at least, it means the end of their closeness. But that's not what it means at all. Sure, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, the question of a union of a man and a woman who's by very nature are very different from each other is going to lead to complexity and difference and conflict and the need for forgiveness and resolution of issues. So as we talk in today's program, we want to help couples who are listening to consider how do they make marriage great by dealing with real issues and, you know, upskilling. And the idea that if you're not yet married, that talking to somebody who is married and is skillful in helping you to make that marriage work well can make a world of difference for you when you do get married. Because if you're skilled and have the tools early, then you won't have to learn by reinventing the wheel.
We often talk about a kind of the demon dialogue of sometimes we can get into arguments and they go round in circles and round and they go nowhere. And how do you break that spiral and maybe how do you deal with issues that are actually that you come across in your relationship? Because conflict is normal. Conflict is an opportunity of growth. And, you know, how do we work through these things and how do we do it better? And courses that Diane myself do and other people do as well help people to look at how we can deal with these areas that maybe are raw spots, areas that we kind of are a bit maybe fearful of, and how do we actually deal with it better and more intentionally.
And conflict can be scary for some people because they may have come from a home where things weren't said and there wasn't conflict, but it was the unsaid, which is equally as damaging as a household that may have shouted and roared and aired everything out in the open and the air was cleared, which can be equally damaging the other way.
You're making a really good point because, particularly in relation to conflict within marriage, because I would actually contend that until you have the commitment in marriage, you actually daren't address conflict in your relationship because you have no assurance that their other person isn't going to just sort of up stakes and move. And so in marriage, there is a commitment one to another to help each other and to work with each other to build something terrific between the two of you. But if you don't have that kind of commitment going in, then you can't really open up and address conflict. And you just have to kind of suck it up. You know, sucking up things is grand for a short time, but not on key issues. You don't really approach marriage in that way. Once you've made a commitment to somebody, you've said, we're going to have difficult moments, but we're going to crack them together.
I think one of the things about helping couples prepare for marriage, which is, in a sense, the primary focus of our conversation today, we need to apprise them of the fact that conflict is inevitable, and they need to learn to address and be skilled to deal with that conflict when it comes up, and not to be pretending that it doesn't. I mean, you know, Diane gave the example of some households are very expressive and therefore the things are out on the table and there's nothing hidden, and others are suppressive and you don't know, but you feel it and you experience the conflict, although it's nothing said. And couples need to learn to have meaningful dialogue and deal with the conflict in a way that helps to come to a resolution. Because when there is conflict and maybe an unease in that journey towards the wedding day, and you're coming and sort of saying, look, there's maybe something that's a red flag here, or I'm worried about it, that's an opportunity for growth.
Definitely is. Yeah.
That's an opportunity to deepen the relationship and to resolve something.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you just know when you walk into a room with a couple, if there's been a conflict, you can just sense it in the air. Nobody has to say anything. You just feel the tension. And dealing with conflict clears that blockage in the air that makes for better intimacy. And it's the learning thing. And when you love one another, and that love is wanting to learn a better way of doing it the next time, a better way, or a better way of learning that thing I did upset you. I'm sorry, I'll try and do it. I'll try it differently the next time, I'll say it differently. And it's a growth thing for yourself, but for your relationship also.
But you have to have courage to deal with conflict.
Yeah.
We went on our preparation course. We had a big argument on when we were going, the night of our preparation course, we were going, arriving at the door of the people who were taking our marriage course, fuming with each other. And it was over a piece of wood. That's the it was over, but it was really, I suppose we were all in maybe the tension of the build up to the marriage and things like that. But we do argue and we do disagree and we do kind of look at those things. But sometimes people are afraid to disagree. And sometimes if there has been conflict in your family and it's been very strong conflict, sometimes you kind of say to yourself, I'm not going to have any conflict in my life. And you swing like a pendulum, you swing totally the other way. And the thing about swinging totally the other way where there's no conflict at all is you can't hold it up there at that other side of the pendulum swing. Eventually, it'll come down, and sometimes it comes back down to the other side where it actually comes back to the kind of conflict in a big way. And so conflict is normal. Conflict can clear the air, as Diane said, and conflict is, you know, how we don't go quickly into defending straight away when we do go to conflict, that we listen to what the person is saying to us. And it is a challenge. I'm challenged with that sometimes when Diane comes with me with a disagreement, that I don't go quickly into a way of defending my position. And I have to try and listen. And that's an area that I'm still working on. I'm work in progress all the time.
Yes, aren't we all? You've been listening to today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. All of the features and programmes you've heard about today simply would not be possible without the generosity of our supporters. So a big thanks to you for helping us as we help strengthen individuals and families throughout Ireland. We'd love to hear from you, by the way. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886, or email us radio@family.ie. That's 086-251-6886, or radio@family.ie. So until next time, on behalf of Stephen Carty and our entire team, I'm Ronan Johnston. Slán go fóill. Thank you for listening to Family.ie.